You know ID in the D in the L A. ID in the D in the F E A. You know ID in the D in the L A. ID in the D in the F E A.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we are coming to you from Boulevard Park, Washington, the home of the Pelton Cast, joined today for a special podcast previewing the WNBA Finals and celebrating the Seattle Storm advancing to the finals for the first time since 2010 by a former third Pelton brother who also covers women's basketball, among other things, for SB Nation. Please welcome back to the pod, Natalie Weiner.
Hey, guys.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be back.
All right, let's start with last night's deciding Game 5, the Storm and the Mercury. A thrilling back-and-forth series with the Storm taking a 2-0 lead, then losing two games in Phoenix, losing Sue Bird to a broken nose in Game 4. Get her back for Game 5, but still Phoenix leading much of the way until the Storm pulls away in the fourth quarter to win and get back to the finals. Natalie, what were your emotions watching this game?
Well, I basically died like 12 times. I mean, it was just so intense, and I honestly didn't even watch the entire game because I was at LeBron's shoe release event, which was like a whole other fiasco, but it was insane. I mean, I don't understand what even happened for the entire game, much less the fourth quarter alone, which was, I don't know. Honestly, I'm sort of glad I didn't see the whole game because I don't think I could have emotionally handled it. It was just like too close.
Yeah. Tristan was also unable to watch the game, but was the voice of cynicism throughout it when the Storm were trailing early. After, I think you get, what did you give Phoenix, like a 99%
100%. Chance? 100%. Cool 100% chance of victory.
He was going based on that Diana Taurasi 13-0 and winner-take-all game stat and going by that. And it sure felt in the first half like, uh-oh, here we go again, especially how poorly the Storm had played in fourth quarters throughout this series. But
It was crazy.
Yeah, I like Stewie's comment after the game last night that, you know, we kind of always felt like we had this. And the one interesting thing was Phoenix went down sort of to a six-player rotation in this game. Leilani Mitchell played fewer than 2 minutes off the bench. And Dan Hughes was trusting his bench, and in particular Sammy Whitcomb. And that sort of seemed to catch up and finally make a difference in the second half.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like that's kind of been part of the story all season, right? It's like whether the bench players have been able to contribute has been a pretty big factor for the Storm succeeding, I guess, because they've been sort of going pretty up tempo most of the time. So that sort of makes sense. But yeah, I don't know. I love that they were able to break that Diana Taurasi streak. I love that Sue Bird like saw that and she was like, oh, really? Like, you know. I feel like it had to have been kind of specific motivation for her.
She didn't say that when I asked her about it before the series, but I think one of the things that happens, I feel like this happened a lot in the NBA with Kobe Bryant, is there's like these players like Kobe and like Diana who are just such visceral, obvious competitors that the sort of more quiet competitors like Sue sometimes tend to go overlooked. It's not like she wants to win any less because of the fact that she's not yelling at the referees, or with the exception of last night when she got as heated as I've ever seen her, or talking trash to opponents. She still burns to win just as badly. She's just kind of channeling it in a different way.
Right. Yeah. No. And last night we definitely got to see the other side of her on that regard. Like on that front, I mean, both with the fact that she was like yelling at refs, which I mean, I've never seen happen. Not that I'm like the super expert, but it was definitely seemed out of character. And also the fact that she like just totally went and annihilated in the fourth quarter, which I mean, she is an assassin, but it's not normally in that kind of intense way, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it's usually more the quiet assassin where, you know, she makes the big shot. I think of at Phoenix in 2010 when the Storm made kind of a similar comeback to the ones the Mercury have had in this series in Game 2 to close out and sweep that Western Conference Finals and reach the WNBA Finals back then for the second time. And, you know, there's a few other regular season games I can think of. Dane Hughes has talked about games that had happened against San Antonio. But just like the series of shot after shot to kind of take over control of the game was unusual for her.
Yeah, I mean, she just, because obviously she's facilitating too. She's a point guard. But like, you know, she was just like, no, I'm doing all of it. This is my moment. I don't know. But it was incredible to watch, you know, and cool to see that it got other people sort of engaged too. Like, just kind of, it seemed like there was online buzz about it, which is always fun to see about WNBA stuff.
Absolutely.
That online buzz, can I read a series of Shea Serrano tweets? I want to ask you after that, what happened during the moment that Sue Bird ended up getting heated with the ref? Because I only saw the clip of it with no sound, and it didn't really seem like it made much sense. But before then, a series of Shea Serrano tweets.
Okay,
I'm going to start with Sue Bird. These are all in all caps, of course. Sue Bird built the Statue of Liberty, and Sue Bird carved Mount Rushmore, and Sue Bird wrote every song that ever got to number one on any Billboard chart.
I mean, I hope she built the Space Needle, too, then.
I don't know the rules here, but if Sue Bird yells at you, then you should just go and go outside and dig yourself a grave and crawl inside of it. You're going to bow at Sue Bird's feet, and you're going to fucking like it. The water got too deep for everybody but Sue Bird. Break my nose literally tonight if it means I can play basketball the way Sue Bird is playing this quarter. Sue fucking Bird, say the whole thing. Sue Bird is different. They just keep going.
It's a long one.
I would like to formally apologize to Sue Bird for not naming all three of my sons after Sue Bird. I hope Seattle can get their new stadium built in time for the finals because Sue Bird fucking set this one on fire tonight. It's a wreck.
I wanted to copy that one to Oakview Group. I don't think their timetable is quite that fast to rebuild Keane. So fortunately, it is still standing for Friday's game one. Okay, so a couple of things here. Number one, The nickname that Sue has on like the WNBA message boards is Die Bitches, which is what people like want to think that she's saying when she makes these big shots at the end of games. And like last night was the ultimate Die Bitches Sue game. I didn't feel like I could safely tweet that from my professional account, but I did throw a Sue DB bird out there in the hope that like a few people would get that inside joke. Okay, and specifically to when she got so upset there. You know, it's weird. We couldn't see anything that happened because basically, after the tie-up at least, because of the fact that the players who kind of came in and then the referees who came in around Sue Bird and Breon January, and I think Tawana Bonner was also involved in the tie-up. She was the one who jumped. Yeah, she was, because she was the one who jumped against Sue, although January is the one that Sue kind of knocked down when she got up too aggressively. So they blocked everything. We couldn't see anything. And then when you see the replay, you can't really tell where Sue said after the game. The reason she was so upset is that they had hit down on her mask and that, you know, that had caused it to start bleeding a little bit again from the broken nose. But you can't see that anywhere on the replay that was on the broadcast on ESPN News. So I'm not sure exactly what happened there other than her comment on it.
Yeah, I felt like you could see that maybe one of them like brushed it slightly, you know, and like maybe because she just broke her nose, like that was enough that it was painful, you know. I don't know. It certainly didn't look as aggressive as she was like describing it. She was like walking around gesturing like they like yanked on it or something, which is seemed pretty clearly like did not happen. But I can imagine it's tender, so.
Yeah, and again, I mean, this being Sue, like, she's not known for exaggerating or making up this sort of thing. So I'm going to ride with her on this one.
Right, and then everyone on Twitter was like, well, if it were Taurasi, like, she would have gotten a technical foul. And I was like, all right, relax. We have, like, 5 minutes left in this crazy game. Just let it roll.
Also, everybody, Diana has gotten away with an amazing amount of stuff without getting a technical foul. This was later in this game, I think, after it was basically already decided. She had a play where she was frustrated. Yeah, it was like a layup late in the game that she missed and ended up in the crowd. And she came up, like, pumping her fist, complaining to the referee. Nothing at that point. Like, look, WNBA referees are letting a lot go at this point. So, it goes both ways on that one.
I tend to agree. But I think it's just because she had so much screen time of like yelling and everyone was like, what's going on?
I mean, it definitely was a lot. She's just earned some goodwill there. Okay, before we leave this game behind and start to preview the finals, a couple more people I want to talk about. I mentioned Sammy Whitcomb coming off the bench, playing the entire fourth quarter, much of the third, in place of Jewel Lloyd. It was just like her energy is so necessary for the Storm sometimes. And it was awesome to see her have this moment on this stage as someone who didn't make the WNBA until several years after she played at UW, you know, kind of made herself into a better player in Australia. And now in her second year in the league to have this kind of impact on the playoffs. And then also another player who came into the league, well, she was actually, Alicia was drafted, but took her a couple of years to stick in the league. Alicia Clark, defending Diana Taurasi throughout this series, hit a big three to tie it at one point and had 10 rebounds, out-rebounded the entire Phoenix Mercury team over a 14-minute stretch of this game, finishing with 13. Just awesome to see those two role players step up on this kind of stage.
Yeah, no, I mean, Alicia Clark just had a double-double, like, extremely casually. She was just like, yeah, I'm here, don't worry about it. And some of those rebounds she was getting were, like, so clutch. Like, they were in front of Mercury players, but she was just faster. I don't know. It was awesome.
That blew my mind when I saw it, because there was just so much else going on with Sue in particular that I just hadn't even noticed that. And we somehow have gotten this far without talking about Breanna Stewart, who is the MVP of the league and scored 28 points and played all 40 minutes for the Storm. You just kind of take that for granted. But it was definitely an MVP performance by Stewie.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, let's talk about the finals, where the Storm will be playing the Washington Mystics, who also won a Game 5 on Tuesday night. Did that on the road in Atlanta to take that series 3-2. I wasn't surprised. I felt like they were the better team going into the series, and I think it might have actually been a shorter series if it hadn't been for Elena Deladon's injury in Game 2, which, you know, I don't know if you were watching this live, but I think everyone who was immediately thought, oh no, she tore her ACL or did something horrible.
Yeah, no, it looks so terrible.
Yeah. Turned out to just be a bone bruise. She missed Game 3, which Atlanta won in Washington, but then came back for Games 4 and 5, both of them won by the Mystics. And now they will make their first ever appearance in franchise history in the WNBA Finals against the Storm. Natalie, what's kind of your first impression of this matchup between the Storm and the Mystics?
Well, I mean, it's sort of terrifying when you look at the last game they had against each other, in which the Mystics just totally spanked the Storm for, like, no good reason, you know? But obviously, you know, the Storm have the win in the series, but, like, I don't know, they're really good, and they just, it's, I think they feel like underdogs. I mean, they are technically given the rankings, but I just feel like the top tier of the WNBA, it's like everybody's so close together, you know, that it's like the fact that they were, what, the 3 seed doesn't really make a huge difference. But, yeah, I don't know. They're great. And Elena Deladon is scary. And they just, I don't know. It alarms me a lot, basically. It's how I feel about it.
I think that's completely fair. As you mentioned, the Storm won 2 or 3 games in this series. They won the 2 games at Key Arena, one of which Elena Deladon didn't play in due to illness at that point. And then the most recent meeting, August 9th, was at Capital One Arena, a game that, if you want to come up with a good explanation for it, the game did start at 8:30 a.m. Pacific time and was the Storm's 3rd game in 4 days, including 2 matinees starting before 9 a.m. Pacific in that stretch. But also Washington shot 12 of 26 on threes, 58% from the field overall. in winning 107-7 in that matchup. I mean, the thing that really stands out to me looking at Washington is the extent to which these two teams largely seem like mirror images of each other.
Yeah. I mean,
there's definitely some differences, but both built around MVPs who are super versatile at power forward. Deladon, who won in 2015 on the Washington side, and then Stewie on the Storm side. Both of them, then, you know, you'd probably say that their second best player is at point guard in Sue Bird, and then Christy Tolliver, who was the second leading scorer and his sister for the Mystics, someone who, you know, really reminded me a lot of Sue back when she was at Maryland and winning a national championship there. Hasn't developed in the same kind of pass-first point guard that Sue is, but has become an all-star point guard in the league. This was her second or all-star appearance. And then 2 centers who kind of came out of nowhere this year. Natasha Howard for the Storm, the most improved player in the league, and then LaToya Sanders for Washington, who had started just 7 career games before this season, all the way back in 2008 as a rookie, but ended up emerging as the Mystics' starting center and ranked second in the league, shooting 61% from the field. And she kind of plays similarly, I think, to Natasha Howard. So, you know, then, you know, maybe the one difference between these two teams and something that I think is going to be really interesting to watch in this series is, you know, well, Ariel Atkins, the rookie for the Mystics who's come up big, has had a huge postseason. She was their leading scorer in Game 5 at Atlanta with 20 points. She's generally not – doesn't have the same kind of pedigree as Jewel Lloyd for the Storm, who gives them that, you know, kind of perimeter go-to score. And I think a big story in the series is whether Jewel can get going after really struggling against Phoenix in the last four games, just 32 points on 9 of 36 shooting over that span.
Yeah, totally. I don't know. It's like Jewel is amazing, but she's so like hot and cold, you know, like she just has like really phenomenal games and then she sometimes kind of disappears. And I don't know. It's like then they have to rely more on the bench like we've seen. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. And yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I do think the similarities that you drew out like make a lot of sense to me. And it'll be they'll be good games, right? Like, I don't think we're going to see another 20-point blowout. Like, I think it's going to be close no matter what. But, I don't know. Another thing that also sort of adds to this feeling, I think, of Washington being the underdog is, like, not only is it their first finals, but also looking at where everybody went to school, I think is kind of interesting. Like, Seattle is coming in with three people who went to UConn, and then, like, Notre Dame and tennis are also represented. Like, the Mystics are one of not that many WNBA teams with no UConn players, right. You know? And it's like, it's just sort of a different vibe. It's interesting.
Yeah, I guess Elena Deladon sort of represents that, having started out at UConn and then transferred back to Delaware, the smaller school closer to home. Yeah. To go back to Jewel Lloyd, you know, you mentioned her streakiness, and I'm optimistic. I think that, you know, a lot of credit has to go to Breon January for the way that she defended Lloyd in that series and kind of was able to just focus on taking her away. And that was interesting because, you know, historically, Jewel Lloyd has just dominated Phoenix. So the fact that she had a poor series was kind of unexpected. But it'll be a different matchup this time with Natasha Cloud. She's probably not that same kind of defender, although she brings more size. But definitely Jewel Lloyd has been a bellwether for the Storm. They went 10-0 during the regular season when she scored at least 20 points and then also won Game 1 against Phoenix, the only time she reached that mark in that series.
Yeah, no, I remember that stat now. I was trying to remember exactly what it was before we talked, but yeah, it's just so we just need her to lock in. Jewel, come through.
Like, absolutely.
Because it's like, you know, you're going to get the Breon points. Like, I don't know, Breonna Stewart, like she's going to she's going to have it together, but because that's just what she does.
Yeah, she's much more of a given, I would say, in terms of the not quite metronomic consistency, but close to that. You know, we talked about the Storm's bench and then how Phoenix kind of shortened their rotation. Mike Thibeau for Washington, who's making his third finals trip, having lost twice in Connecticut, including to the Storm in 2004, he's kind of stuck with an eight-player rotation so far in the playoffs. They have Tierra Ruffin-Pratt and Ariel Powers, a midseason pickup, backing up at the wing spots. And then Tiana Hawkins, who was a Storm first-round pick, played one season in Seattle before they traded her to Washington for Crystal Langhorn, who's still part of the Storm rotation, is a backup five now. She's emerged as kind of a potent stretch four for them, backing up and occasionally playing alongside Deladon, and is averaging 24 points per 40 minutes in the playoffs so far. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see who can kind of claim the upper hand in that reserve matchup.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think... they do. I don't know. I feel like the Mystics have a lot of these players who are just like secretly amazing, just kind of lurking there. And you're like, wait, who are you? The people who don't watch the WNBA especially, but even if you do pay attention, it's like they have a lot of players who don't have really any recognition in the grand scheme, but they're great.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's partially a testament to Thibeau's offense. I mean, he's got a long track record dating back to Connecticut of putting pieces in there, and then probably also a testament probably to Deladon and the kind of defensive attention that she draws.
That's true. Definitely a great point.
So the schedule for the series tips off Friday night at 6 p.m. at Key Arena, then back at the Key on Sunday afternoon at 12:30 p.m. That game is the one in the series that'll be on ABC. and nationally televised.
And directly opposite the Seahawks?
Directly opposite the Seahawks, yes.
I know, of course, right? I was looking at that, and I was like, wait, no, time zones. Oh, yeah, it's all going to be happening. That's great.
Yeah, that's not ideal, I suppose. All right, then the series shifts back to not technically D.C. So the Capital One Arena, the Mystics' usual home, is being renovated right now during the month of September. They played their first three playoff games at George Washington University in downtown D.C. For this series, for the finals, they will be playing games 3 and 4, if necessary, at Eagle Bank Arena on the George Mason University campus in Fairfax, Virginia, about 20 miles west of D.C. So it'll be interesting to see if that's kind of an advantage for the Storm that, you know, it's not the usual home setting for the Mystics.
Yeah, I mean, it just sucks, right, that it's going to be in this random college gym that's in the middle of nowhere, basically. Like, that sucks for everybody, because, like, imagine how that's going to contribute to the atmosphere. I mean, even if it does give the Storm the advantage in the sense that it's not, like, a real home game for the Mystics, like, it's just like, what is this? I don't know. I mean, the Storm, like, the Storm should not be lucky in the WNBA to play at Key Arena, which, as we all know, is kind of old and, like, sad at this point. But they're, like, one of the lucky ones because they've had this home arena for a million years and they've actually had some consistency. Like, most of the league doesn't have that. And the Mystics are a prime example, sadly.
Until the next two seasons when they have to vacate.
Right. Well, no, I know. But, I mean, at least up until this point.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the plus, you know, if you want to take a positive here, the size of Eagle Bank Arena seems like it's pretty ideal for this 10,000 seats. It's going to feel like an intimate atmosphere and feel pretty packed, much the way the Key Arena Lower Bowl often does when they curtain off the Lower Bowl. But you get like those hockey basketball combo arenas like Capital One Arena is, and sometimes they can feel awfully empty if they're not, you know, if there's not 20,000 people in there.
Right. No, for sure. I mean, I hope it's great. I'm just, I don't know. It's just like, what if they leave the college logos on the floor again and it's like the WNBA finals? I don't know. Just.
Yeah, it's unfortunate this has happened a lot with many of these arenas being renovated over the offseason. Minnesota played some finals games at the University of Minnesota and other locations in the past few years. So, it's one of those tough things. All right, do we want to do percentage chances of victory? And maybe then, you know, we've talked about a few keys to the series, but anything else that we think could play a major role in determining the outcome, starting with you, Natalie?
With me? Oh, okay. So percentage chances of victory, like, am I just saying who I think is more likely to win?
Yeah, for the series overall.
Okay. I mean, I think probably, like, I'm going to go 68% Storm. I don't know.
It's very specific. Like, I like it.
What? I don't know. I don't know if I'm doing it right. I don't normally do these things, but, like, that's just, I mean, I think they definitely have an advantage, especially because, unfortunately, Deladon is coming off of an injury. Like, you know,
right.
they definitely have more kind of offensive weapons. And, you know, if Deladon is hindered, you know, which I imagine she will be at least a little bit, you know, they're going to have that kind of advantage. But like you're saying, I do think they are really similar and the Mystics have looked pretty sharp recently. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think there was a stage here where I felt like they were the best team in the league. You're right that Deladon's injury is a bit of a question mark. She's had double doubles in both of the games that she's been back in the lineup, but has only totaled 29 points in those two after going for 32 and 27 in the first two games of the series, which Atlanta Taylor Dodd's really
insane.
Good, but 11 of 28 shooting in that span. So she's, you know, probably I would, if I had to guess from afar, maybe like 85% at this point. I also think it's probably going to be useful for the Storm that they went through the experience of that tough series against Phoenix and their struggles in the fourth quarter, because, you know, I think that if they had just kind of cruised here and then all of a sudden been tested by this Washington team, that might have been a more difficult thing for them. But they've learned a little bit about how to win tough games, and Sue pointed to that, you know, as a factor in their fourth quarter comeback in game five. So I'm going to go with 65%, right in the same ballpark as you are for this series.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now I feel smarter for my percentage, whatever, guess. But yeah, I don't know. There's an advantage, but it's still going to be close, basically.
Right. All right, Tristan, with your intense knowledge of the Mystics.
I've heard of precisely one of their players. And some person named Tebow. Right? Is that their coach's name?
That is
I was thinking how ironic it is to
no
see...
No relation to Tim.
Yeah, to see an ESPN employee defend a Tebow who's in Connecticut.
It's it was based in Connecticut. They're spelled differently, though.
Oh, okay.
They're spelled differently.
Tim Tebow's spelling is much less exotic than,
true,
like, Tebow's.
Much less foreign.
It really feels like... Game five was the real test here. Getting through this series was the real test. This was the Western Conference Finals for the Warriors, getting past the Rockets, and now the Storm can go through and win the championship in three or four games.
No, but Washington's a better team than Phoenix over the course of the season. Now, I mean, I think one of my big takeaways from this series is, like, it's shameful that the Mercury were the number five seed. Like, they have so ridiculous much talent that they should really be the one or the two seed here, but... I mean, Washington has been the better team and was probably the best team in the league after the All-Star break, you know, the last 10 to 15 games of the season.
70% chance of victory.
Okay.
I mean, combined with both that plus having the home court advantage, right? All of these things being through this big test, the Storm are going to be ready to play these games. I wouldn't be shocked if they swept the series.
I'd be pretty surprised if they swept the series. It will also be fascinating if this series goes the distance, the travel here, because of the fact that, you know, even though the WNBA no longer has conferences, it sort of just worked out that they had a Western Conference Finals and an Eastern Conference Finals, and the Storm just had to travel down to Phoenix and back. In this case, they'll have 2 days off between when they make the trip out from Seattle to D.C., Sunday to Wednesday. But if this game goes five, game four will be on Friday night, and game five back in Seattle on Sunday night. So just 1 day to travel cross country for these teams, who, as has been much discussed in the WNBA this season, travel commercial and not via charter like the NBA.
Right.
Any other thoughts going into this series? I mean, what's the level of excitement about seeing the Storm, you know, back playing for a championship for the first time in 8 years?
I mean, I think it's incredible. I'm super excited, especially at this moment when everything else about Seattle sports basically is, like, depressing, except the Sounders. Somebody's going to, like, actually me about soccer. Sorry, I haven't watched the Sounders. Sounders and rain. Okay, sure. But if we're looking at baseball or football, you know, it's like the Mariners are doing Mariners things. The Seahawks are just being ridiculous, as I know we're going to talk about a little bit. But, like, look at the Storm. They're amazing. And, like, it's this perfect story because they want to win one more championship for Sue, right? And it's cool because I talked to Jewel before the start of the season, and she was like, this year we're doing it for Sue. Like, that was her mission before anything even started. And, you know, they've been able to carry that through, and it's just really cool.
Yeah, there was kind of a poignant moment after Game 5 where someone asked Sue about getting back for the third time. And first she gave some advice for Stewie about, you know, like, when you get here in your third season, as she also did. As Stewie pointed out, she was 24. Sue was still 23 at the time. You know, you sort of take it for granted, like, this is just what's going to happen. And then she got back in 2010 and, you know, much more realized the gravity and urgency of the situation, even though they did in fact win that championship in 2004. But, you know, then she said that, you know, when they started rebuilding with her in her mid-30s, I mean, like probably the rest of us, she thought she would never get back to this level. So it's awesome that the rebuild has paid dividends in time for Sue to be a part of it. I think the other story, which probably isn't getting talked about enough, I even had kind of forgotten about it until I was thinking about it earlier today, is the Storm have a chance to send Key Arena out with a championship. Yeah. That's no better way to do that.
No, definitely. That would be amazing. I mean, you guys read Isaiah Thomas's thing for the Players Tribune, right?
Yeah.
It was so good. I loved it. I had low expectations, honestly, because I'm not, like, always a fan of the Players Tribune stuff. But he put it so eloquently, like, sort of thinking about, you know, what it means to have basketball in Seattle and how the Storm represent that and how great they are and all that. I don't know. It was cool.
Well, yeah, we saw a lot of tweets, I think, from NBA reporters that I follow, at least, about that last night, about, you know, it's so nice to watch professional basketball again in Seattle. And, you know, obviously the Storm have been here the whole time, but not necessarily playing meaningful games in the last 8 years here. So, you know, that's... That was good to see. And also an interesting Sonics tie there, the fact that the first two Sonics finals and the Sonics championship were both Seattle versus Washington.
Huh. Ooh, interesting. The basketball rivalry nobody's talking about. The real Washington versus the fake Washington. It's all happening. This is actually an Illuminati conspiracy. I think we've figured it out.
There you go. We had Lenny Wilkins, the coach of that Sonics championship team, in the building last night, along with Slick Watts. And then Nate Robinson was sitting in front of me. So it was a good contingent. I'm sure we'll see more support coming, hopefully. I guess, Seahawks players, the schedule does not really work out for them to make it to the final, right, sadly. But I'm sure they'll be supporting as well. Should we turn our attention here while we have you to today's big news that I guess I don't want to short that NHL Seattle adding investors and also completing their transaction documents. That's news. But really, the story is Earl Thomas reporting to the Seahawks on a scale of 1 to 29 in honor of Earl's jersey number. How excited are you about this?
I am 19. I mean, I'm just sort of sad because he seems really upset still.
And I
don't want Earl Thomas to be sad, you know? Like, I mean, I'm excited that he's going to play, you know, because I love watching him play, but I'm sad that he couldn't get what he wanted. You know what I mean?
But absolutely. I mean, I think we all, you know, if there's a contingent of Seahawks fans that's opposed to the idea of extending him, it is very small and a not so vocal minority at this point.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, I'll be like sort of a reporter. I'll be a very NFL reporter and say that I talked to a former Seahawk who shall remain nameless over the weekend. And the first thing he said was, "Can you believe the Seahawks paid Tyler Lockett and not Earl Thomas?" And I was like, "I cannot," but you know, you would know more about this than I would. But yeah, so it's a ridiculous thing and the fitting conclusion to a ridiculous off season, but whatever.
But at least Earl's back.
Yes, he is back. Even though he's posting that he's back with like vaguely threatening Instagram captions, but you know, whatever.
The disrespect has been well noted and will not be forgotten.
Although,
if he's looking for inspiration that Father Time may have an undefeated record, but best believe I plan on taking him into triple overtime when it comes to my career, he needs look no farther than Sue Bird.
That's true. That's true.
That'll definitely make him feel better. Especially if he suffers an injury like Cam Chancellor or Richard Sherman.
Or like Sue Bird.
You just feel so much better going into the season knowing, assuming that Earl Thomas, he practiced today. I think all signs are pointing to him playing on Sunday in Denver. Knowing that he's going to be on the field and then up the middle, you have Bobby Wagner, the D-line, which is still a little bit unproven, Bobby Wagner, and then Earl Thomas. It makes you feel so much more confident in the cornerbacks who are out there. In the secondary, where it's like Bradley McDougald and Earl Thomas is not a bad safety combo. It's probably one of the top 10 in the league at that point. So you have to feel just so much better going into the season. We talked repeatedly about what would happen and about whether Earl would be back before the season. And basically nobody who we talked to thought that there was a possibility of that happening.
Yeah,
I'm
excited that Ben was wrong with his he'll never play for the Seahawks again.
We don't know. He hasn't played the game yet.
That's true. But apparently they've also, the other reporting today right before that came out was Adam Schefter indicating that the Cowboys had increased their offer to a second round pick and the Seahawks had shown no interest in it. So whether they knew that Earl was coming in or not, it doesn't sound like they're planning to trade him.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like, it's great. And it totally, I mean, he's crucial. You know, we all know that he makes the defense exponentially better just all by himself. So, but yeah, it's just, I just don't want him to be sad. I don't want him to like be resentful of the whole thing. But like, also at the same time, I personally am of the belief that you kind of can only play football at one speed, you know, like you can't really be half in, like you're either playing or you're not playing. So I don't think it's going to affect his play at all or anything. But.
Oh, you were so close to there too. You're either competing or you're not.
Well, yeah, I know it's a cliche, but I really do think, like, I don't know, football is just so intense. Like, your life is actually in danger if you're phoning it in, you know? So yeah, that's kind of my feeling on it.
I thought the comments, everybody being like, oh, no, it's so scary seeing an angry old Thomas in a contract year or whatever. It's like, but he's angry at his team. We would not have imagined that Earl Thomas would report before Le'Veon Bell, though.
Especially now that both of us are Le'Veon Bell fantasy.
Are you too?
I took God. Took him in our.
You two are in a fantasy draft later today. I want to let you know that my top two running backs in the Pelton Cast Fantasy League were Le'Veon Bell and Jerick McKinnon.
I thought you were going to say Kristen Michael.
I would be happy with Kristen Michael.
Did someone take Kristen Michael in our league last night?
I don't think so.
I went looking for him and couldn't find him.
I think
at
he's
one
pretty,
point.
Pretty deep on the depth chart there still.
I thought he was the projected starter. When did that change?
I think Marlon Mack.
He is the projected starter.
Oh, maybe he got drafted.
I think.
I don't know. I didn't look closely at our league to see whether he got drafted, but that would have been a fitting tribute. We've talked about...
He's the projected starter in my heart.
There we go. Every week.
Jermaine Kearse is the projected starter in my heart.
Kearse and Kason Williams right across from each other.
We've talked about kind of outlook for the season and expectations with both the aforementioned Ben and Mina Kimes. How are you feeling about the Seahawks going into this season?
I don't know. Mediocre, I guess.
That was the verbal equivalent of a shrug there.
Yes, basically. I mean, like, I don't know. I feel, like, not super qualified to give any sort of football predictions or previews. But just generally, I mean, kind of looking at what we have there, it just feels like a kind of... 8-8 vibe or something, you know, like I think like Russell Wilson is just not the kind of guy who's going to lose like 10 games in a season or anything crazy like that. But I don't know if they're going to be able to get it together, just partially because the team doesn't really seem to have much chemistry at this point, you know, seems sort of fragmented. So I don't know. Also going 0-4 in the preseason. What is that about?
That's very atypical for the Seahawks.
I'm weirdly okay with the 0-4 preseason. Like, I mean, were they 4-0 last year in the preseason? I mean, well, we know that the Browns were 4-0 last year in the preseason. And I'm a strong believer in that the preseason does not matter at all.
I mean, it doesn't matter, but also it's a little bit like you couldn't even win one, you know? Like, it's like maybe they were just working out all the kinks, though, and then they'll be amazing once the season starts.
I don't think it matters all the way, but I don't think it matters none either. It matters a little bit.
Here's what matters. Kristen Michael is still available in the league, okay. Owned in just 1.6% of fantasy leagues.
Those are all leagues.
One of them
Seahawks
is
fans.
Mine. In another, I might take him tonight too. We'll see.
Not if I take him first.
Wow, we're going to duke it out. Last year, actually, somebody took him out of spite in a league that I was in. I was like, why are you doing this?
Just harming your own chances for spite.
I was just like,
you don't know. He might blow up. Didn't you see his amazing preseason carries? Like, come on.
He's definitely going to. I'm just like, fantasy football, just shut up and let me draft Michael Dixon. For whatever position.
Seahawks defense, I think he qualifies.
Not the same.
All right.
Good luck to both of you two, though, later in your fantasy draft. I hope that you don't draft both Le'Veon Bell and Jerick McKinnon in that one.
I like my chances of not doing that.
Well, we're going to have to fight over Kearse, though. My team name is Kearse Crew, so, you know. I'm just saying.
All right, well, on that note, game one coming up Friday night at Key Arena. Thanks so much, Natalie, for joining us and helping preview the series. And everybody check out your work on SB Nation and then also on Twitter at Natalie Weiner.
Yes, I'm so excited. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks.